Hello and welcome back to the Wine Club. It's been a few weeks. I have been working like mad since being back in the UK. Self-sponsored podcast today. If you need any graphic design, photography, videography, 3D, skatewinemedia.com. Freelancing right now, trying to slot this in between doing some work. Today, we have Chaz Merriweather from down in Newquay, the TR7 crew. He's currently got some big projects coming up, and it was really good to have a conversation with Chaz Merriweather about the Newquay scene, skaters coming out of the southwest, and skate parks in general. So enjoy. Episode 14, welcome back to the UK, the Wine Club.
Who are you guys working for?
Who is this?
It's Skate Wine.
Oh, beautiful. Did you say Skate Wine?
Yes, sir.
Hello, welcome back to the Wine Club. Oh, I'm out of practice. Our first interview in the UK is none other than Chaz Merriweather from TR7. So thank you ever so much for coming on. I apologise. 45 minutes of trying to sort out this microphone, and people don't need to know, but the microphone isn't actually working. Apparently multi-channel doesn't work with OBS. So thank you for hanging on there whilst I was trying to sort that out.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. How are you? You good?
I'm all good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm okay now that I've got the microphone sorted out and I'm hopefully recording all of this.
So
I'm going to go straight into the icebreaker question that I know Trev Johnson hates. But if you were to be sat at a bar and you are ordering an alcoholic beverage, preferably a wine bottle or some kind of wine, what would you describe yourself as?
Oh, to be completely honest, I'm not much of a wine drinker, but I'd have to say Malbec to keep the wife happy. Anything that's to do with Argentina is a thumbs up for me.
So the wife is from Argentina?
Yeah.
How did you meet your wife?
We met in Andorra in the mountains. I was a snowboard instructor and she worked in the ski rental shop.
Ah, right. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You've done snowboard tutorial. What were you doing out there?
So yeah, I used to work as a snowboard instructor straight out of school. I went and did a course to get my qualification, and then that was kind of my full-time job. Just more time in the snow than not in the snow, really.
That's brilliant. How long did you do that for then?
4 years, but it was only winter season, so it would be like 6 months of the year. But I'd do the winter season in Andorra and then come back to Newquay for the summers, where we'd do surf lessons and other stuff like that.
So is that your link to Newquay then?
Yeah, so similar story with Newquay. I came here 11, 12 years ago to do a surf instructor course, and then was lucky enough to get work straight after that, and then caught the surf bug and never left, and now we all call it home.
Wait, so you're a man of all board sports then? Snowboarding, surfing and skateboarding?
I try to be, yeah. I mean, surfing definitely isn't one that I'd claim to be good at. I enjoy it, but I'm still learning. I did a lot of snowboarding, but I've always been a skateboarder at heart. That's definitely the one I've always been the most passionate about.
Yeah.
I love all three.
That's brilliant. Did you ever get sponsored for snowboarding?
I didn't, just because it was more just of a job. Like, I'd be teaching people all day and then I'd go ride with friends after work. But I never really pushed myself to the limit with the snowboarding, because it gets to a point where it's terrifying. You can't really just play it safe and do manuals. You kind of have to be sending it off massive jumps, and bit too scary for me eventually.
That's so true. So so did you grow up in Newquay then?
I didn't. I was born in Southampton, which few people know. And then I moved to Mallorca when I was about 7. But I've always come to Cornwall on holidays with my family, like half terms and stuff like that. It's kind of the place we've always come to. And since a young age, I always knew I wanted to be here. And I've lived here now for more years than I've lived anywhere else in my life. So it does feel like home, even though I'm not from here. Which I think is the case with a lot of locals around here. You see people in the Cornish skate scene and assume that they're from here, but the truth is that very few of us actually are.
It's similar to North Devon. So was it Mallorca you said?
Yeah.
Mallorca. So how long were you in Mallorca for, until, did you go from Mallorca then to being a snowboard instructor?
Yeah, so I was in Mallorca from about 7 years old until I was 16, just when I was kind of starting A-levels. And then I bailed out of A-levels and went and did a snowboard instructor course instead at 16, and then kind of left from there and never went back.
Was there much of a skate scene in Mallorca?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I honestly think it's one of the best places in the world for skateboarding. And I mean, a lot of people would have seen Mallorca clips, like Mallorca spots in videos growing up. And even nowadays, there's so many hot spots over there. Growing up, seeing the Blueprint videos as well, they came over all the time, skated all our local spots. And we were spoiled for choice, really, because it's like Barcelona, but more chill because it's the island vibe. And then there's skate parks and DIYs everywhere as well. So it's a very, very strong community, considering that it's only an island.
Yeah, right. And for those like me that are very geography uneducated, whereabouts is Mallorca? Is it near? It's near Spain, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's Balearic Island, just off the bottom of Spain to the right. And you've got different islands, and Mallorca's the biggest one.
Is that near Sardinia then? Is that close to Sardinia?
No, it's kind of... If Spain's here, Mallorca's there.
Lessons on the wine club, geography lessons. So it's weird that you reminded me of that, because I remember watching Rad, and I think that Mallorca and Barcelona back in the early 2000s were places up and coming within the skateboarding. And I mean, Spain now, especially Barcelona, is massive for yeah. that. Did you get sponsored when you were in Mallorca then for your skateboarding?
Yeah, so... there's actually, even though it's an island and there's a capital city, there's about 5 different core skate shops, and they're all very, very strong shops that support the scene. And
wow.
I got sponsored by kind of the smallest, newest one. And then from there, managed to step up to another better one. And then from there, another one. It was mainly shop sponsors, but over there, it's kind of like your shop is everything. It's your crew. And I never really got further than a shop sponsor, but that's all I ever wanted. I just wanted to feel like part of a crew. So that was perfect for me. I was more than happy with that.
Yeah, that's wicked. And did you manage to skate much when you were like snowboarding?
Yeah, but it was just mini ramps. So I always have my skateboard with me, because better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. But where I was, there was only one mini ramp. It's probably only 3 foot and really mellow, so that was all I had for 6 months of the year. So I got really good at skating one panel, doing blunt stools and stuff, but nothing more than that, really.
what's your favorite thing to skate?
Oh, it depends on the day, really. I'm definitely more of a street skater, and I love skating flat ground. Like, I don't think I'll ever get bored of flat ground. I'm constantly working on flip tricks, but I really enjoy mani pads as well. Just low impact, somewhere where you're not too scared. It just requires patience. That's my cup of tea.
Yeah, right. I remember when I dislocated my shoulder I think it was around 21. And I remember I didn't skate for like, I think it was like 18 months to 2 years. And I remember the first, like just pushing down the street, flat ground. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've missed this so much. Just that feeling of just going forwards.
For sure.
Incredible.
I love cruises as well, just riding around. Like this board behind me, I got the big soft wheels. I actually enjoy cruising around on town on that just as much as I enjoy doing tricks.
But what did you skate mostly in Mallorca? Was it street skating there, like flat ground, or was there skate parks?
Pretty much 100% street skating. I kind of grew up in a street skating world where everyone wanted to kickflip when they were kids. Like transition skating wasn't really on my radar until 5 years into my skateboarding. You know, we all just would skate flat ground. We never even really went to skate parks too much. It was just skating flat ground because there's smooth ground everywhere you go. And then the progression from that would be stairs or hubbers or whatever you could find, really. But proper street skating, you know, out and about with the crew all weekend, that was what we'd do.
That's wicked. How did you go from, like, what was the interval between snowboard instructor and then what you do now, which is with TR7? What's the gap there?
Well, from about 16 years old until 20, 21 years old, I was living out of a suitcase, and it was amazing. It was some of the best times of my life, but I got a bit tired of traveling so much and having to find a new flat every 6 months and do all this different paperwork. And it just became a bit of a hassle. And I'm a big dog person, and having a dog with that lifestyle didn't work. And I always loved Nuki because you can surf and skate. So you get two board sports, which was a definite pull for me. But yeah, just slowly sort of transitioned into wanting to be in one place all year round and not having to move so much. And then the TR7 thing came after that, I think. We'd already committed to kind of being in Nuki all year round. And then that was just a reason to be in Nuki all year round.
How old were you when you moved to Nuki then?
I want to say 17.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. You're quite young then.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know anyone here either. I literally came here to do this surf instructor course and then met people like Harry down at Wooden Waves and became part of the crew really quickly because it's such a great scene here in Nuki. And once you become part of the Nuki scene, it's very hard to leave it.
Sounds like Hills Have Eyes. I'll let you back out.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the basis of starting TR7 then? Why did you start?
It started off as just an idea, just because of where I'd grown up, seeing all these different shops and how they can support the community and myself being fortunate enough to be supported by shops that would help me out with decks and products where needed. I just felt like Nuki had such a big community full of talent that was kind of being overlooked. We had a skate shop in town, but I didn't feel like it was doing too much for the community, and we wanted to see if we could offer something. And it really did just start out as a brand. Actually, it started off with me filming videos to go right back to start. I'd film edits of Wooden Waves and post them online under the name TR7 Clips.
Okay.
And my missus kind of helped me come up with a bit of a brand and change it to TR7 Skate. And then we did some hoodies and decks, and then it grew into a shop. And then from the shop, it grew into the skate park. So it's all kind of happened step by step, but it was never planned to get to the skate park. It kind of happened quite organically.
Dare I eat into my questions, but what made you choose TR7?
So TR7 is the postcode for Nuki. It's kind of the whole of Nuki has TR7 at the beginning of every postcode. And for me, it just means community. A lot of people here already see TR7 as something much more than just a postcode. Like a lot of the locals have got it tattooed. And we came up with the name TR7 Clips because all of the skate videos were filmed of the local skaters. And it just felt right to kind of keep that going and stick with something that felt right to the local community.
Yeah, nice. What was after doing the clips? How did you get on from doing the clips to... You had a little skate park, right?
No, not at the beginning. We just had we basically had a storage unit that we converted into a skate shop.
Oh, okay. Yeah, where was really... the storage unit?
So it was here in Nuki. It was kind of just out of the main town centre, kind of up the road, tucked away. Like, you wouldn't find it unless you knew it was there, really. It was proper hidden away. But it was really cheap, and it was a good way for us to be able to display all the stuff that we were doing without the stress of having a high street shop that would have cost a million times the price. So it was a good starting point for us.
So with the shop and the videos, what else were you doing, like, to start off with? Did you have riders as well?
Yeah, well, the team, we picked the team riders before we started with the branding, because that's something that we've always believed was something that was going to help drive. And the reason we were doing it in the first place was to help local riders. So we picked a team of, I don't know, it's like 5 years ago now. I want to say six different riders, local riders that we were really impressed with at the time. And then we had all our own hoodies and decks. I was working in the shop doing the sales, but I was also doing other jobs on the side. So it wasn't really like a full-time thing for me at the beginning, because I was still having to make a living somewhere else. So yeah, it kind of started really small like that and then grew from there.
Who was your first six riders? Are you allowed to name them?
Ooh, that's a good question. So Harry Weil, Beth Rickard, Jay Lenton, Joe Haddon, Lola Tambling, I think it might have just been those five. The riders have changed over the years. Like we've had more, we've had some leave and some join us. So I can't think right now, but I'm pretty sure that's the first five that we started with.
What year was this?
So this would have been 2018.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's it feels like yesterday, but that's 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, it feels like yesterday, but a lot of the kids, like the younger kids that we kind of helped out at the start, they're kind of becoming teenagers now. So it feels like it's been going for ages, seeing this whole new generation grow up around us.
Is Lola T still on TR7?
She isn't anymore, unfortunately, but we kind of did feel that she was kind of growing really quickly and really focused on the contests, and we didn't want to hold her back. She started getting other offers and we kind of said, you know, if that's what you want to do, go for it. But it's amazing to see how well she's doing now in the contest scene and just inspiring girls all over the place to get into it. We're very proud of what she's become.
I was going to say, it must be a nice feeling to have a like rider that you helped excel now into being Team GB.
Yeah, definitely.
They're out. You didn't think about going out to Buenos. They're out in Buenos. Is it Buenos Aires? They're out there at the moment.
Yeah, they're in San Juan, so not quite Buenos Aires. But it is weird for myself and my partner seeing them all in Argentina, like seeing how they're all getting on with being in that sort of different culture.
you didn't think about going.
It's a long way to go.
That's true. I didn't know whether you could stay with the missus's family or something.
Yeah, we went to California with Lola when she had a contest at the Exposure, the Huntington or Poods? I think it was Poods, but it got changed to Huntington. But we went out to support her for that. And we try and travel and get out and about as much as we can. But right now in the situation we're in, relocating the business, it wasn't really the right time to take a trip to South America as much as we'd love to.
That's true. Have you spent any time in South America? Because I've got a feeling that you know Spanish, don't you?
Yeah. So I grew up speaking Spanish. I went to a Spanish school when I lived in Mallorca.
Of course you did.
But I learned more Spanish from skateboarding, to be honest, because most of my skater mates couldn't speak English. So I was thrown in at the deep end. But I spent time in South America. First time I went to Argentina, I was there for 7 months. And we try and go at least once a year because family is everything to the Argentinians. And it's good for us to go and spend time with them. But I'd never been before until I'd met my partner. And now we've been to Chile, Uruguay, Argentina. I haven't been to Mexico yet, though. No mames, wait. I'm obsessed with Mexican food and Mexican culture. So it's on the list.
It's interesting you bring up about family, because something that I explained to my girlfriend and her family is I love my family to bits and I'm close to my family. But at the same time, I think that especially South American countries, they have such a better, in my opinion, such a better unit for the families. How is it with your missus not being in Buenos Aires? That's something that
we talk about a lot. My missus has definitely struggled with not being there, but her family, even her grandma, are so great with technology that they're constantly talking to each other, more so than I do to my family who live nearby. So it is hard though, and like you said, it's very different, the family vibe with South Americans compared to the British. I think we're a bit more, everyone likes to be in their own little enclosed world in the UK. Like we keep in contact here and there with the family, but it's not a big thing like it is over there. I honestly feel nowadays that I'm closer to my partner's family than I am to my own.
Definitely. I felt that I was over there for 6 months and I felt so much more closer to Yanine's family in the end than I do with a lot of my family, for sure. And it's such an eye-opener, and I definitely agree with, we almost are antisocial with our own families in Britain, I think.
For sure. I love my family, but I can go months without speaking to, or even years without speaking to aunties and uncles. And I speak to my brother a fair bit, but I only see him a couple of times a year and he lives a couple of hours away, you know?
Yeah. Getting back to your TR7 skate park. So you don't have the indoor space that you used to have with like the mini ramp anymore?
We don't anymore, unfortunately. So we, at the beginning of this year, we got a letter of eviction from our landlord completely out of the blue, which was shocking and a total heartbreak.
So, that's gutting,
and he gave
yeah.
us, he gave us 2 weeks to basically vacate the premises. So yeah, we didn't have a lot of options. We had to pack it all down and get out of there as quick as possible, just because we wanted to make sure that everything was safe and that we weren't going to get ourselves into any more of a sticky situation, really. So everything's in storage at the moment, but we're in the process of relocating. It's just taking a little bit longer than we wish it would.
How long did you have that skate park for? When did it open?
So it opened beginning of 2020, just before COVID hit, which was really good timing.
Oh, no way.
So we spent a couple of months building it to have it open for the beginning of 2020. And I think we were open for about 2 months, and then we had to completely close the place down for 7-8 months. So the timing was horrible to start with, and we still paid full rent and everything through that whole time, even though we had nothing coming in.
No way.
But we survived it. We made it through, and we were able to slowly start getting the business off the ground after that. But to be honest, it feels like we only really had the place up and running for a complete year because of COVID and the way things went down. Like, you can be open, but you can't be open. You're allowed one person, but you can't do groups and blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it doesn't feel like we were open that long at all. But in total, we had the place for about 3 years.
That makes sense, because I did start seeing a lot of content coming out of your indoor park after COVID. So that totally makes sense. Did you have to pay to get into it then, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so we just rented the unit, and then we basically bought the wood. The Tamblings donated us the mini ramp from the junkyard.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So that's a mini ramp that they very kindly donated to us, but they had it outdoors at the junkyard, and basically they had a noise complaint, so needed to rehome it. And it was perfect timing, because it meant that we had half the skate park straight away, and then we just had to kind of build around that.
I realized that question was really stupid. What I meant was, it wasn't just a community project. There was also the ability to go and skate it yourself. Not that you would have to pay to get into it. That's such a skater question. Do I have to pay?
Yeah, well, no, we would have loved to have let people come in for free, but obviously we had the rent to pay and everything. But we kind of set it up thinking that it would be just somewhere to skate when it's raining and somewhere for the locals to have as their own. But actually, it was more the lessons that really took off for us. And we'd started getting into a really good routine of teaching. And it was just Harry and I on the lesson side of things. And it became all about the lessons, really. We were still open for general entry, but we always gave priority to lessons because it was the best form of income for us to cover all of the costs.
Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. I meant, was it just solely lessons, or could you pay to get in? I've been missing this podcast.
But I think that basically the way we ran lessons, because it was a small skate park, we do them privately, so no one else can come in whilst the lesson's going on. So I think because of that, we unintentionally turned it into a skate school, and it might have turned people off coming for a skate just because they felt like there was always a lesson going on and it complicated the rota.
Yeah.
But we did try and do different events and stuff like that just to get everyone in and having a go in it.
I'm guessing there was the schedule for when you could go and have a free ride.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we were open 6 days a week, and we were offering general entry all of those days, but it's tricky because you want to offer general entry at times when you're not doing lessons, which is school times, but all the kids are in school and they want to come and skate after school. So running an indoor skate park is quite a headache.
It's a minefield.
It is. It's impossible to keep everyone happy, but we just did everything we could to keep the majority happy.
So what's your plans moving forwards now then? Are you planning to get a new building?
Yeah. So, to be honest, the previous location, we already felt within a year or two of being there that we'd outgrown it and that we wanted something bigger. So we have actively been looking for somewhere bigger for quite some time now. Obviously, there's a bit more pressure now because we're homeless, so to speak. But we've got our eyes on a premises that's really a good size, and we like the look of it. We haven't signed the papers yet, so we're still working on that, just boring paperwork stuff. But yeah, it's a bigger unit, more than twice the size of the last one. So it will be able to do a proper skate park, somewhere that will be more enjoyable for skaters of all levels, really. And we just want to make it somewhere that's fun for absolutely everyone, regardless of age or ability. That's the goal.
What did you do with everything from the unit? If you had 2 weeks, that must have been terrible.
I honestly think that it would have been an impossible task if it was just myself, Harry, and my Mrs. Martina, because we were the only three that worked there. And I don't know if you'd seen it, but we had the skate park. Then we had a chill room where all the magazines and the videos and all that were displayed, and then an office and a shop. So there was like four separate units that needed emptying. But amazingly, like always happens in Nuki, the whole community came together to help us. And within a couple of days of announcing that we needed help, there was about 20 people there with screwdrivers and mums and dads bringing everyone coffees and food. And it was actually a really nice atmosphere, despite it being a really sad time. The community really came together and helped us get it all packed up. And Mount Hawk really kindly stored all of the wood for us. So everything is underneath the Mount Hawk vert ramp at the moment.
Wow.
Which was a mission to pack away, because you got to take everything in one bit of wood at a time because the shutter was broken into the vert ramp.
Through
in
the door.
Yeah, it was quite a mission, but it's nice to know that it's stored somewhere dry, somewhere safe, and it's not costing us an arm and a leg to have some ridiculous storage unit with it all in, you know? It's nice to have that support from another indoor skate park in Cornwall.
So you're hoping to reuse the stuff that you've managed to salvage from your last place then?
As much of it as we can, but a new skate park, because it's a bigger skate park, it is going to need new wood. And from speaking with Trev, he's kind of mentioned that we can use a lot of the wood underneath as the base layer, but we will want to put fresh wood on top just to make it as smooth as possible.
So when you say Trev, has Trev been helping out with the designs then, has he?
He has indeed. He's been very helpful. Last skate park, we did it ourselves. It was Harry and I, and we actually designed it on Skate 3, which we're quite proud of. we use it a lot. It's not very accurate, but it's really good for just kind of brainstorming and playing with ideas. And so we literally designed it on Skate 3, had the mini ramp, and then just built the rest around it, having never built a skate park before, either of us, which was a really fun project. But this time round, we felt that it would just be better to get some professionals in with the experience and take the pressure off our shoulders a little bit, so we can focus more on the business side of things, because Trev's done some amazing work around the country, and we were just excited to have that extra set of hands, really.
I'd never thought about using a computer game to get an idea or a visualization of it. I don't think it's going to put Trev out of a job or a business, but
I think
it's one of those things that's a good idea.
Yeah, Trev kind of laughed at it because he's so good at using programs like yourself, where it's all perfectly measured and exactly where it needs to go. Skate 3 is not like that at all. It's just like, here's a quarter pipe, here's a ledge. But it was good just when you're playing with all these ideas in your head to actually put them in a game and play the game and see how it all flows together.
That's awesome. I'd never thought about, because I remember when I was younger playing on like Tony Hawk's and used to have the like skate park builder.
Yeah,
and I'd always
like
make it and then visualize new tricks I could do on like the different ramps. I'd never actually thought about using that. Trev, I mean, obviously I've been working with him recently, and I went up to London a couple of weeks ago and he was helping out with one of the skate schools in London, and they're going through ideas and he's mocking them up in real time. And I remember watching it and thinking, this is, as a graphic designer who can do that with like logos, but not skate parks. And he's doing it like, he's doing it to size. And I'm someone that's terrible at maths. And he's just there like, I was just like, wow,
he's an absolute magician.
Absolute skill of that is insane.
Plus, it's just amazing to be able to work with skateboarders. Like, he knows what we're after. I didn't have to go too into depth. I just had to give him a few examples. He's seen us skating, so he knows what kind of skating we're into. Whereas if you just get a load of carpenters helping, it's kind of just telling them where to screw. So yeah. Trev was brutally honest with me and kind of said, that driveway looks sick, but it's not going to fit. It may fit on Skate 3, but I think this will be better, sort of thing. And I'm very grateful to have someone that will say that to me, because if not, we'd end up building something ridiculous that just maybe wouldn't work properly.
Yeah, definitely. When are we going to be able to see the plans then? When are the general public going to be able to see them?
The plans are attached to our crowdfunder, and we want to launch that as soon as possible. If it were up to us, we would have launched it already. But basically, we wanted to wait until we've signed the papers for the new premises, just because we don't want to start expecting people to donate towards this project unless it's something concrete, something that's definitely going to happen, you know? So it all depends on when we sign this lease, which will hopefully be within the next couple of weeks, but it's hard to pinpoint an exact date at the moment. But everything's ready to go. We just need to click launch, But we're just trying to build up a bit of suspense at the moment, get everyone wondering what's going on.
Where will people be able to keep up to date with this progress? I've assumed you've got a website.
Yeah, so we've got two websites, actually. We've got one for the brand and the shop, which is just tr7skate.co.uk, and then there's tr7skatepark.co.uk. But the best way to keep up to date with everything is just through socials, through Facebook and Instagram. That's where we're kind of posting more stuff. But we have done a few blogs on the website as well, just kind of talking through updates of what's going on. And we're going to try and keep that going just to keep people on it.
Yes, I saw one of those. I really liked it. I reposted it. What's your handle on the socials?
Just TR7Skate.
Okay. Is that SK8?
SKATE or TR7 Skate Park if it's more specific to the skate park. There's two Instagrams as well. doubled up on everything,
so people will be able to like keep up to date through your socials.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. And
my missus is just saying that we should do a little preview of the plans to get people excited, show them a little bit of it.
When I saw them, I was very excited. But I mean, whenever I see a new skate park, I get excited. And like say with Trev, especially. So yeah, and I'm excited for people to see them and hopefully...
I am too. I'm dying to get them out there. I just don't want to jump the gun and get everyone too excited and then not be able to go ahead with it for whatever reason. We want to make sure that we get people's hopes up with a good reason.
Definitely. Is there anything else... apart from the skate park and the shop, any other like ideas that you've got bubbling under the surface as well? Or is that all your time going towards getting the skate park done?
All of our time is going towards getting it done because that's the priority, to have this new premises up and running. But we are also planning a bunch of different outreach programs. Now that we're a community interest company, we want to try and get more people involved by setting up an adaptive program, a woman and LGBTQ program, a surf skate program. That's something that we're really passionate about at the moment. Being in Cornwall, we really want to help the surf training side of things and set up a proper program for that, where we can have surf instructors come in and teach the maneuvers on land.
Okay.
So yeah. I think that's something that's probably going to make us stand out a little bit, because it's not really that big in the UK, but it seems to happen in every other country, and I can't think why it's not that big here yet. So we want to try and step our foot into that door, so to speak.
It might be funding. I feel like everywhere else gets loads of funding for child stuff and we get a nice bunch of flowers at the side of the road.
For sure. Something that we did in the last place that we're really proud of and we want to do again in this new place, you might have seen it already, is the rope system that we had hanging from the roof.
No.
So it was, you might not have seen it, I don't know, I just assumed, but it's basically a rope that hangs from the roof directly above the middle of the mini ramp. And you can either clip into a climbing harness or there's a water ski handle.
Yeah, I have seen that. It was a bit
of a gimmick, a bit of a novelty thing that we kind of joked around about. But then some friends of ours installed it for us because they're a rope access company. And it actually worked really well. So it became like a thing where we were using that for every lesson and people were booking because of the rope system. So that's definitely something we want to set up in the new place as well, because we just want everyone to give skateboarding a go. We don't believe in excuses. No matter what your age or your ability, everyone should have a go.
It's one of those things where when you see it, you're like, what on earth is that? But then it's like, I guess it's a little bit like sliced bread. It's like, why hasn't that been invented before? Because it's actually amazing.
For sure. We don't want to take credit for it because we had seen it done, but it was a surfer who did it, and his one was kind of like on a bungee system that would shoot from side to side. Ours was a pendulum, so it stayed still, which was really good, say, for little kids that wanted to learn to pump. They've got this handle, and as they're coming down the ramp, they can pull it, and it takes them back over to that side, and it just helps them with the momentum, because a lot of little kids just don't have the weight or the power to be able to pump.
And with did you see the progress from them being able to, because I just feel like something like that, because you're using the pulley system, you might end up being like reliant on it. So did they manage to transition from the pulley system to then just being able to do it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we get a lot of comments like that. A lot of people call us out on it saying that's not the proper technique, blah, blah, blah. And I completely understand that, because if it wasn't mine, I'd probably be commenting as well. But all of the kids and even adults that used it, we'd get them into a habit of getting used to it. And then once you've built up your speed, you let go of it. So it's more just to help you get to the point you need to be at. But some people would say adults that are a bit nervous of falling, they'd clip into the harness if they want to learn kick turns. They'll do it a bunch of times in the harness and then they'll take it all off and give it a go. But we were always quite adamant on not getting too comfortable with the rope, on using it here and there, but not spending a whole hour with it, because obviously then you would get too comfortable with it and it would be terrifying to try without it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things as well where you're building the muscle memory, you're building the confidence, and then you'll just forget that you haven't got it on when you actually get, well, you should, in theory, you should forget that you've actually got it on, and you turn and you're like, oh, I have not even attached that pulley system anymore. I need one for vert so I can learn backside airs above coping.
Well, they were trying to do one at Mount Hawk a few years ago. I don't know if you knew Kieran, who used to work there.
Yes, yeah.
He basically set one up to help people drop in the vert. It never went live with it. And I remember seeing a video of him diving headfirst off the top of Mount Hawk vert, and this rope caught him just before he hit the floor. And I just thought, like, what are you doing?
There's a really good technique for that, though, without a pulley system that I've seen. I can't remember his name. But there's a guy from Sweden who, I don't know whether it's actually his, but, like, he sits on the side of the ramp. The first time I ever saw it, I was blown away. He sits on the side of the ramp with a person trying to learn to drop in, holds their hands, and then they go to drop in and he just slides down the ramp like with them.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it.
Do that.
I remember seeing it being like, this is mental. Like, this is not going to work. And it works amazingly well. Like, Jim Langren uses it a lot now.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it, how nowadays there's so many good techniques to teach, but for our generation and the generations before us, you just had to keep falling until it worked.
Or not. That's what I found with skateboarding, is people fall off, hurt themselves, they're like, this isn't for me. Or people fall off and they're like, no, I want to do that again. There seems to be like a line of people who want to keep going and trying, and then other people that just like, this is way too painful for me. I think some people like yourself and like Harry probably picked up skateboarding like really, I think there's a certain amount of people that pick up naturally and just like have the ability to fall and like have the good balance, which you must be able to with like skateboarding, snowboarding and being able to surf. Like, I think
it definitely helps. I kind of have my blood as well, because, and Harry does too actually, because my mum skated when she was a kid. She was a proper tomboy.
No way.
She was the one that kind of got me into it. She taught me how to tick tack and turn and push and all that sort of stuff.
That's
so
wicked.
I started at a really young age, probably sort of 4 or 5, first time I tried it, but I didn't really get properly into it till I was about 8. But I've always kind of joked that it's in my blood, that it was meant to be.
where did your mum like learn to skate then? Where was she brought up?
In Devon, just around Devon, on driveways and stuff like that. This was like a long time ago, with little clay wheels and plastic board. Like, one of her friends' driveways had like a few banks on the side, so there's a load of old photos of her with these big flared jeans on doing little kick turns. And
that's so cool. Yeah, so going back, I have actually completely skipped going back to when did you first meet Harry then? Was it when you were 17 and you'd moved to Newquay?
Yeah, literally 17 years old, went down Wooden Ways. Harry Wild was there, Josh Rounding was there, Jake Sparham was probably kind of just getting into skating at the time, but there was already such a strong scene, and I just was consumed by it from the day I went to Wooden Waves. I just wanted to be there every day.
Man, Wooden Waves. How old are you?
I'm 28.
Oh, you're 28? Okay. I think that must have been around the period of time that obviously, I couldn't drive anywhere till I was like 19, and then I started going to Mount Hawk a lot with Mike Day, and that's when I started getting into vert skating. And I remember, I'm still don't know who it was, but I'm sure it was Harry that I saw do. I think it was a kickflip blunt, or it was something ridiculous, or blunt flip out, or something on the box at Wooden Waves. And I remember being like, "Holy crap! I've never heard of this person." And then obviously that suddenly you got social media. That was around the time that social media started getting big. You got Facebook. I'm talking about like 2005, 2006. And then that's what I find strange is like, I don't think I ever managed to bump into you or Harry throughout those years of like me starting to go out and skateboard outside of my little bubble in Biddeford. What's that?
We never leave Newquay, that's why.
That's true as well. That makes me laugh because you and Harry were just up in London for the what was it called?
The National Champs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did that go?
That was good. Like, completely honest, I'm not a big fan of the city, so that was quite a mission for us going up there. But it was an amazing experience. Met, like, bumped into a load of people I haven't seen in years, made a load of new friends, and I haven't skated a contest on that level ever, and I haven't skated a contest in a long time, so yeah, pretty nerve-wracking.
Where did you come? Did you get to the...
I came ninth, so I think I was like 0.2 away from making it into the finals.
No way!
But I managed to roll my ankle the day before qualifiers. So it's a miracle that I even made it that far. My ankle was so fat. Like I actually was kind of happy that I didn't make it through to the final because my ankle was throbbing by that point in the day, and I was more than happy just to sit it out and watch Harry and the others kill it. But Harry came sixth, I think. He did a bit better.
Sixth overall. Because that's something that I didn't cover, is it's amazing you two went up. You haven't entered a competition for ages. And then you're both on the social media of Skateboard GB, like smashing it. Yeah. And I think that's something that I used to find with Biddeford as well, and the Southwest in general. I think Dave Snadden's from down Exeter way, but... and Leo and Jody are obviously from Truro, but I think a lot of the scene in the Southwest used to, I mean, now you've got George and Lola, but used to get kind of missed out by skateboard media, I feel. What about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back to Wooden Waves, there was such a strong scene there. I don't know if you've ever heard of people like Harry Bray and people from his era, but... I mean, we had a bit of everything. Adam Moss as well has always been a local legend. And there were so many different types of skateboarder down here that you could kind of just go to the park and sit there for an afternoon and get inspired by what was going on. But 10 years ago, no one really cared about Instagram or anything like that. So you'd see all this amazing stuff go down, but only you and the select few people that were there knew it happened. And there's still that kind of still happens here today where... Even at Concrete Waves, you can go any given day and there'll be bangers happening left and right, but no one's bothered to film it because we're all just skating. No one's really thinking about trying to put it online. And I think that it can make or break a skate scene, really, because a lot of people nowadays are too focused on filming everything they do and posting it and trying to get the likes. But I feel like it's important just to do it because it makes you happy. Sod what everyone else thinks.
100%. I had a toil with this one because it was like people put out a lot of content and a lot of stuff to try and get likes, and I started getting a little bit of like a hatred towards that sort of thing. But at the same time, I absolutely love other people like yourselves, Dan and TR7, seeing the content that comes out from Nuki. It's like I wouldn't see that otherwise, and I absolutely love seeing stuff that's like creative. I know people don't. Necessarily agree with me on this one, but Alex DeCuna always puts out stuff which I find really entertaining, and and that makes me want to go out and do some videos and make content. So I have this like love-hate relationship with it.
For sure.
But having said that, I think with regards to the Nuki scene, excuse me for getting his name, I'm gonna have to edit this bit out, but who's the guy that always does manuals? He's like the manual king.
What, nose manuals or normal manuals?
Fakey manuals.
Jake Nuglord.
Yeah. I'm an idiot. Seeing stuff like Jake has been posted, like reposted by so many people now that you're seeing stuff coming out of Nuki a lot more through the social channels. Sure. I also realised that I've kind of hypocritically gone against something. I said that the Southwest doesn't get any skate media coverage, and then the first person you named was Harry Bray. And Harry Bray was like one of my idols when I was 13, 14, because he was on Rad. Did you ever watch Rad?
Yeah, I've seen a bit of it.
Yeah, so I was always like...
We've had a lot of great skaters come out of Nuki like Bray. I mentioned Bray because I feel like he's one that a lot of people outside of Cornwall know, but I feel like there's so much talent around here. Like some of the older guys that don't even skate that much anymore, they'll just kind of come and hang out. If you knew what they did back in the day, you would have been blown away, but everyone's just so chill about it. They're kind of just playing it cool, you know? There's... Jakey is one that a lot of people know of nowadays because he really stands out. He's got such a great style and a really unique bag of tricks, but he's only one of a big scene down here that a lot of people maybe don't know about. Like Jakey included, they're not interested in contests and stuff like that. They don't really want to be part of that scene, so they don't get out there as much. Like Harry and I, you're saying we were seen in London. that was a big step for us, but a lot of the locals won't even take that step. They just want to stay in their own bubble and just enjoy skateboarding the way it is.
I think that's a big part of skateboarding as well. And I think that if you're happy with just staying in Biddeford and smashing out the tricks, and you know, that's as far as you want to take skateboarding, but you're happy with that, that's brilliant. And then the other people that want to push it to the, you know, the commercial level or national level, I think that's also awesome if that's what you enjoy. Because I always enjoyed contest skating. Like, I always enjoyed, I never skated vert, but I used to go to the vert series and literally try and learn tricks as everyone else is doing their comp runs. And I always really enjoy that. And it's one of those things where you're competing against other people, but the biggest person you're competing against is yourself.
Yeah.
How did definitely. You find the London Champs? Did you enjoy it without the old pain of the ankle?
I actually really enjoyed it. I skated a lot of contests growing up in Mallorca. They were always putting on contests over there. I was really nervous leading up to it and just overthinking it like crazy, thinking I was just going to drop in and bail everything. But getting there and spending a couple of days getting to know the park, because I'd never been to Bay 66 before. And also meeting a load of new people definitely brought the nerves down. Like people that I already knew of and had seen videos of and kind of thought, oh, he's really good. Then you meet them and he's a sound person. You're like, I don't care if he beats me because he's a really nice guy. So I actually had a blast. It was really good fun. And I'm eager to go back next year and praying that I don't get another ankle roll, because that's just my luck. I always get injured right when I shouldn't be injured.
Yeah, I love going to even if I'm not entering. And that's kind of why I started Skatewine, is going to contests, meeting new skaters, meeting new personalities. I absolutely love it. What would you say differentiates the New Quay and maybe the Southwest scene to the rest of the UK, if there is one?
I think that the thing that it's hard to say because it's changed a lot since Wooden Waves has transferred into Concrete Waves. But the thing that always made me feel like it was such a special community is back in Wooden Waves, we have the whole skate park, but you put the worst obstacle possible, like someone will build some sketchy mani pad ledge set up with a kicker out, whatever. And the whole town will session it together. And I started to realize that moving here made me realize that it doesn't matter what you're skating, it's who you're skating it with. And I think that really sums up the New Quay community, because even with Concrete Waves, if someone brings some piece of crap wally block down to the park, everyone will session it and not go anywhere near the rest of the park. And that's what I've always loved about it. Everyone down here is a lot more passionate about filming video parts and doing stuff like that, instead of just promoting themselves constantly on socials. People are quite good at sitting on the footage and working on projects and stuff like that, which for me, I love contests as well. Like yourself, I'm a bit of a skate nerd. I love just going there and being surrounded by it. But growing up a street skater, filming video parts has always been like the goal for me. And Harry as well, he's a big fan of that. And that's kind of where we're at down here. We're just constantly trying to progress ourselves as skateboarders, whether people care about it or not.
I think that shows as well through the competition like Concrete Chaos, where they had that Vulcan DIY box.
Yeah.
And Harry was smashing it in the street section, and then he moved it to the bowl, or vice versa. My memory serves me very badly at 35. But then in the bowl, and Harry was trying to do the gap air, I think he was going tail slide.
Yeah.
Just making it look super easy, like that box was there every day.
That's another thing that I'd like to say as well, that we're the New Quay community. I can't speak for myself, but I will say it for the others. We've got a lot of ATVs. Like Harry's probably the king of it, but you take people like Jack Foster, who's on our team as well, Jakey Sparham, and a bunch of them. They're so good at the bowl side of things. They'll shut that pool down, but they're also great at doing flip tricks down the stairs and rails. And for me, that's skateboarding. It's like how it used to be. It's not I'm street or I'm transition. In New Quay, it seems that you can just, everyone likes to do everything. Apart from me, I'm terrified of transition.
I remember seeing Jake, I think one of the first clips from Jake skating the big like pool bowled out section in New Quay Concrete Waves. And I was blown away, because usually someone is either really good at street or really good at transition.
Yeah,
and it's never a mixture. And when I remember, because he was putting out a lot of like, you know, flip in, manual flip out, or whatever, and it was a lot of street techie stuff. And then he was just, I can't even remember what the first clip I saw, but he did this air or something in that vert section. I was just like, hang on a second, it doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't. It still blows my mind today. I'll sit down there and I'll session something with the boys on the street side, and then that session quietens down and they all start dropping into the bowl, and I'm just like, I'm going to have a sit down, I reckon. And you're an 18 as well, though. You've got the vert skating and the nolly hard flips and all that stuff. You've got a bit of everything.
Jack of all trades, master of none. I try. I love skateboarding. I think that's the thing that people don't realise, is I just love skateboarding. So if it's vert ramp, mini ramp, transition, DIY, street, like, I love it all. And that to me is, like you say, is skateboarding. I don't just go, I'm a vert skateboarder or I'm a street skateboarder. Like, I love it all. If you're a skateboarder, you're a skateboarder to me.
For sure.
Two people that you haven't mentioned is Sam Bosworth, all-terrain shredder.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I'd like to get
Sam
him on at some point.
Bosworth is he's quite something. I think he's got a few kids now, so he's a very busy man. We don't see him as much as I'd like to, but wow. How many people do you know that have that style on vert and that style on the street? Because that's another thing. A lot of people that are maybe really good at vert don't really have the style on street, or vice versa. Like, if I tried to skate a vert ramp, I'd look so stiff. But Bosworth, I swear, last time I seen him at Hawk, he was trying tray flip fakies on the vert ramp right out above the coping, no grab. And then he'll just like jump on the street. He's been at Concrete Ways before, and he'll be doing like switch flip nose manis on the mani pad and switch hard flips down the stairs. Like, no one, I don't think I've ever met anyone in the world that is as all-rounded and looks as good on a skateboard as him. But like I say, we don't get to see that much of him now. But it's always a pleasure when we do. We love watching him shred.
I'm glad to hear that. He won the X Games, Junior X Games. Like, he wins the X Games. Sure. I that's another thing. And I think it's so Southwest, is he won the X Games and he's just like, ah, like, I've been there, done that. I don't need to go any further.
That's just it. It's just the Cornish vibe. Like, people don't feel the need to keep pursuing it and travel loads and do all this stuff. It's like, oh, do that. That was fun. Tick it off. Like, I'm pretty sure he skated a vert ramp or a demo with Tony Hawk when he was like a little kid or something, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Like, he did.
And I'm at Mount Hawk just like sessioning flip tricks with him up the Eurogap. And I actually, funnily enough, before I moved to Mount Hawk, when I was way younger, I must have been sort of early teens, I came across a video of Sam Bosworth and Jake Anderson. They were having a game of skate on Mount Hawk vert ramp.
That's my video.
That was like the first video I'd ever seen of Cornish skateboarding and Mount Hawk. So that was kind of one of the things that drew me into the Cornish scene, even though vert skating never really took off for me.
It's so different. It took me ages to get from mini ramp to vert, because I'd skated mini ramp for 5 years. And I still struggle with airs out the coping because I ollie and I end up flying 12 foot
that's
to my
knees. That's the problem I have. You go up the ramp and ollie that way instead of going up. You just slap the tail too hard. And I did ride the vert the other day for the first time in a long time because no one was there. It was the perfect opportunity. But I haven't dropped it in yet. I'll just pump my way up and do some big turns and power slides.
You've not dropped in yet?
No.
Oh, come on now. You've got to drop in.
It's not the drop in I'm afraid of. It's what happens on the other side.
I made that mistake going down the roll-in when I was like 20. I think I must have been 20. And I went down the roll-in when they just first made them. And I went down the first and the last time I've ever gone down that roll-in. And Jake Anderson swears after I did it the first time, I went to go for a 50-50. And I went to go for the 50-50. And I remember thinking, this is strange. Like, I was weightless. I was like, this is really. And I looked down and I just kept going up. And my board was doing a 50-50, and my body was just going up, and I was like, oh my God. And I came down, landed on my knees on the coping, did a forward flip and landed in the ramp. And then after that, I always sucked in my knees when I went down the roll-in, which is kind of pointless. And that's why I stopped using the roll-in, because Jake Anderson swore that I was the only person that could go down that roll-in and do a kick turn the other side without hitting the coping. But to me, I was so happy.
Yeah, I have always really wanted to get into it. I love watching vert skating, but I've had a knee surgery and I just don't think that, like, I never learnt to knee slide, and I think I might be a bit too late in life to try and figure that out because my knees don't bend that far.
And if you ollie out from a backside air, which I've done many a time, and miss the transition and you land on your knees at like 3 or 4 foot down, it really does hurt, and I've messed up my right knee from doing it from the compression of your knee, and that's why I really hate backside airs, because front side I'm a little bit better, but backside airs get me every time, and it winds me up profusely, because I watch and skate with people who are doing like 10 foot and I'm like, I know I can do it, but my brain just wants to ollie every time I get to the coping. I actually did manage to get one in Norway last year. Jesse Thomas helped me get one out the coping about a foot, I think I was out.
That's all I want. That's all I want is a good backside air. Yeah, I don't need all the fancy flip tricks or anything like that. Just give me a good backside air and I'll be happy.
The worst thing is, like Jim Langren says, it's like you're just riding an invisible wall. You just have to imagine that you're still going up, but that doesn't
turn
compute.
No grab.
Yeah, it sounds so easy.
I've done one. Harry bullied me into doing it on the extension at Concrete Waves that kind of links into the Euro Gap where the stairs are, the narrow one. But I was probably about that high above the coping and like tensed up. Like, I want to be like full on Jimmy Wilkins steez pushing that back leg round, but I just don't have the guts to send it like that. It's terrifying.
He's something else. He is absolutely something else. I saw him at Vertac and he did an alley-oop frontside ollie, and seeing it in person, it doesn't look like the board should stay on his
on
feet.
The side like that and the knee on the board. I think he's doing a good job of getting everyone really into vert skating again. He's brought a new kind of flavor to it, so to speak. My opinion, I might be wrong, but yeah, I don't know. He takes simple, I want to say simple, but it's not really. He takes simple tricks and just makes them look amazing. Like my vert terminology is awful, so this might be wrong, but I think it's called the lean 360, the front side one. When he does them, that's just the most insane thing. Or 540, it's the full 540, but front side nose grab. You just like blind the whole thing. I don't understand how it works, but it looks incredible.
Yeah, he's something else. A special, a bit like Sam Bosworth. He's special talent. I think Sam Bosworth's like used to be one of like three or four people that could do kickflip fives.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
I'm going to move on to the old questions that we got in. I haven't mentioned him yet, but there's a local down that way which I must remember to go into the DMs because he DM'd me. But first off, we got three serious questions from Sean Goff and Brett Dye, two guests that have been on former interviews on the podcast.
Two
living legends. Sean Goff says, do you meet up with Dave for Cockney sing songs like the old days?
What, Dave Morgan?
I'm guessing he means Dave Morgan. I have no idea. There's no surname that's been given.
Oh, you know what? It's Chaz and Dave, isn't it? I haven't. Like, no one's brought that reference up in a while, but a lot of people just assume that that's where Chaz comes from. Chaz
that
and
reference,
Dave.
That reference went straight over my head.
I'm glad I got it. I'd be like, did I used to sing with Dave Morgan?
The worst thing is Sean would have watched it back and been like, none of these two youngins know what we're going on about here.
Well, I got it, Sean. Nice try.
His second question, this is a great one. How long did TR1 to TR6 skate parks last, and will there be a TR8?
That's a great one.
You can see why.
This new premises we're looking at isn't actually in the TR7 postcode, so a lot of people are kind of saying, well, what are you going to do? You're going to change the name, but I think that TR7 is just who we are now, and we're just going to have to run with it. And at the end of the day, it all started in TR7, so it would be weird to change it. And there is a lot of different TRs because it's all kind of different towns from around Truro, but TR7 is the best TR.
It's defined now, isn't it? It's defined.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great question.
Two serious questions coming in from Sean Goff. Kalaku's response... How did the idea start TR7 come around? Sorry, my English is terrible. How did the idea to start TR7 come around?
Well, it's like I said earlier, it was just talking about wanting to support local skaters like Harry Weil and Beth Rickard that we could see were skating really hard, but they couldn't afford a new brand new deck every month or whatever. So we wanted to try and support the community. And I'd say it just started from that.
Being back into interviewing after maybe a 3-week hiatus, I now feel with the next question that I am letting the team down. Really good question, which I haven't asked, and I'm pleased because I noticed the last one I stepped on the toes. Again, Kate Kaluka's response, what's been your biggest highlight since opening TR7 skate?
I think the biggest highlight for me would be helping out certain individuals with skateboarding that maybe wouldn't have got into it before, and then watching the passion really grow within them to the point that they become skate rats, having never done it before, to suddenly being as obsessed, if not more, than I am, and teaching these kids moves and then seeing them out at Concrete Waves practicing over and over again. That, like, it doesn't get any better than that for me. I feel like we're watching this whole new generation of skateboarding evolve, and we're somewhat responsible for it.
I couldn't agree more. The allowing or bringing someone else into that feeling that you first got when you first started skateboarding. And whenever I hear a soundtrack out of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 or 2, it instantly takes me back to being 11 to, I think I was about 14 years old, playing those computer games. And I've just invested in a Zero nosebleed board, because that feeling of like wanting to go out, learn an ollie, learn a kickflip, learn a nollie hard flip is just, it's just indescribable. And I think that you see someone else, when you see someone else enjoying it like that, it's like, that's why I love it.
We've got a young lad on the team at the moment who originally was on our flow team, but we promoted him up to the full team. He's, I want to say he's about 14 now, but he must have been sort of 8 or 9 when we originally put him on. And his name's Joss Bellamy. I don't know if you've come across him yet, but you'll find out about him sooner or later. And his progression's just gone through the roof. It's insane. Like, he's ridiculously consistent, and it's just amazing to feel like we're a part of that progression, and we're going to continue being a part of that progression until he's better than we ever were.
So I've seen that with Lola. Lola's just gone from being,
for sure,
oh, she's good, to being like, oh, I can't even think about dreaming to do that trick anymore. That's ridiculous.
I still remember when we met Lola, she was probably about 8 as well, and she was just a shy little girl, really high-pitched voice, but just really bubbly personality, and yeah, we got on with her so well, and now she's a young woman who's like one of the best in the world. It's crazy to think how quickly that's happened.
Absolutely smashing it. Next one up from Kaluka. Do you know this Kaluka by any chance?
Yeah, her name's Kayla.
Kayla.
Yeah.
Kayla Koo, is it?
I think so, yeah.
What makes you different from other skate brands?
I'd say it doesn't necessarily make us different, but we're very proud to be skater-owned, and I don't think that that's as common as it used to be. And we've always been skater-owned, skater-operated, and our skate park was for skateboarding. We didn't allow scooters, we didn't allow bikes, and I feel like maybe that's what makes us stand out, is that's been our prime focus since day one, is let's help skateboarding evolve. It's not about money, it's about the community and about the sport, or whatever you want to label it as.
Definitely. I'm amazed at when I started skateboarding and my teen years when I first got sponsored, people were just hating on, I'm not even going to name them, but a lot of brands now that are huge within skateboarding, if you turned up to a skate park wearing those shoes or having that board, they would just be like, what are you doing? Like, you would, yeah, just be, as much as we're a welcoming community, you would just be like, no, you need to go and support skater owned. And now, one, you know, it's just one of those things, it's business, and there's a lot of brands now, which I'm surprised at, that are you know, doing really well, and they, you know, at the end of the day, they're marketing execs behind a computer trying to make as much money as they can, which, as long as they're putting back into the skate community, I think that's the most positive thing that can come from all of this.
Definitely. The only suit you'll ever catch me in is a wetsuit.
This, Kayla's taken my job here with all these great questions. Do you find you, that do you find that skating helps with mental health?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a bit of a no-brainer. It's helped me personally. I've been skating for 20 odd years now. It's helped me through so much different stuff. And for everyone, I feel like it helps you in your own certain way, depending on what you're going through. And it's just a great release, because like it's been said a million times before, when you're skateboarding, that's the only thing you can think about. And it's a great way of switching off your brain for an hour or however long you manage to do it. And it's important to get out and about, you know, no one wants to sit in all day. It's important to have a reason to get out. And if I didn't get into skateboarding, I probably wouldn't be a sporty person, and I don't know who I would have become. So I'm really grateful, because It's got me out of the house since a young age. It's helped me learn a new language. It's formed all these different friendship groups all over the world. And it's really helped my mental health and helped my confidence as a person.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I found out the hardest way during lockdown is when they shut down Biddeford Skate Park and they put sandbags on it. It was like, I went to the streets. I was skating a little crappy wooden curb down the council's car park.
Nice.
But I was still getting that feeling of, this is amazing, I love skateboarding. But my goodness, did it not knock me for six, not being able to just go and skate my local skate park.
You get too used to it, don't you? Like, down here, there's not really any decent street spots, so the skate park's the go-to. It's the place where everyone goes. And we had the same thing. It was fenced off through COVID, and we were all meeting up at the bus stop, and the police would come down and kind of say, you need to, there's only five of you can be here, but there's 20 of you. And it's like, well, I'm not leaving. You tell him to leave. And it was just such a weird time.
So weird.
It was great to see all these up and coming bowl kids being forced to learn how to skate a curb, though. It was really interesting watching them all try and transfer their skills from a skate park to the street. Whereas for my generation, it was the other way around.
Yeah, that was definitely, I mean, I can, like you say, I can skate flat ground, but definitely my flat ground intake definitely peaked during COVID.
Yeah.
Next person out, massive shout outs. I met them at, I did my first and only jam, Skatewine Jam, after 1 year of being on YouTube. And I met Reese through Sam Bosworth. So it's Reese Bickmore, MF Reese Bickmore's response. When are you going to get Soul a Bitch? I think I've got a feeling that he does go on to ask a really long-winded question. So I'll leave you on that one whilst I look for his longer-winded question.
Well, just for reference, this is Soul. One day I'd love to have some puppies with him. And it's funny because it's kind of like, in this day and age, it's almost like there's a Tinder kind of thing set up for dogs. Not actually an actual app, but I get people reaching out to me with photos of their female Labradors saying, you know, I'm looking to get her knocked up. And it's a bit of a weird thing, though. And I want to do it because I want one of his puppies one day. I wouldn't do it for any other reason. So I will one day, but I'm keeping him single for the time being, just hanging out with the boys.
It's definitely odd. I have to agree. I found his, this is amazing for me. I found his inbox question on the DMs, which was too long. From. Yeah, it was too long to go in the question box.
That's not like him.
I can't write the bit before this. My question was too long. How does it feel to know if you had a good ankle, you would have beaten Harry Weil, your lifelong friendly rival at the Nationals?
Oh, I would have shut him down. Now, Harry and I have always had a bit of a friendly competition going on in everything. It's not just skateboarding. And having him there helped me massively. And Joss as well. And I wish I could have done better with a better ankle, but it was a good intro to the contest for me. You know, I know that I can go back next year and not feel as nervous and hopefully do better than Harry. It doesn't matter if he comes 40th, as long as I come 39th. We're not going for gold here.
He also went on to say, this will be the third time you've been asked, why TR7? Because we all know 7 are 9. What do you say in 7's defense? Ah, 7, 8, 9.
7, 8, 9. Is that another Reese one?
Yeah, that's another Reese.
Classic Reese.
Classic Reese.
Answered his own question there.
Absolute killer on a skateboard. I think he's definitely one of the people I feel that is a silent ninja down there.
For sure. He's one that I should have mentioned earlier. He's only actually been part of the Nuki scene for a couple of years. He was living over Penzance before. And like I say, we never leave Nuki, so Penzance is well out of the way. but he lives with Harry now, and he has lived with Harry for a while. And he's an absolute ledge killer. Like, he's one of the best ledge skaters that I know. And
he uploaded a video yesterday of him doing the switch back tail. I can't even do a normal back tail.
Yeah, he's got a lot of crazy moves, and he's a very fun person to skate with. Really enjoy skating with Reese. Always hyped to see him and his mustache rock up down the skate park.
I love it that he's rocking a mustache now. Absolutely love it.
I'm pretty sure he is. When I think of Reese, that comes to mind, but his style's constantly changing. He's one of them.
Constantly evolving.
Love you, Reese.
Jack Foz's response, yeah. Which is another fully serious question. Why, it says why dose, but I think it's meant to be why does. Why does Chaz always eat Sol's dog food for breakfast?
Oh, it's just, you got to check that it's tasty, you know, make sure that they're not getting poisoned. And also I want to make sure that I'm not missing out on the good stuff because I'm paying good money for that food. It's only fair I get a bit of it, right?
Oh, I'm not sure I've even tried dog food once in my life.
I actually have once or twice, but not for breakfast, not to that extent. just a dry biscuit here and there.
Will's Paris's response. What makes the skate scene in Cornwall so special?
Oh, well, like what I said earlier, it's the community. Like a lot of people will say it's the skate parks because we're spoilt for choice down here now with all these amazing parks. But going back to before those were built, it was the community. It's the people that are down here. You've got all the different towns with their own skate scenes. And then you've got hubs like Mount Hawke and Concrete Waves where everyone comes together and you realize that your community is 10 times bigger than you thought it was. And no one ever leaves Cornwall. We're all perfectly happy staying here.
And you're welcoming to other skaters, which I think is also...
Of course. We're always hyped to see new faces down the park, especially if you can see they're a bit intimidated. We always try and make an effort to make people feel welcome. We know what it's like turning up to somewhere like Concrete Waves for the first time. It's a bit intense.
Superb. Superb. C7 Aurelas, C7. A part of this is me trying to read out people's handles.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I think that's one of my misses, mates.
Without being languagist, because I suck at Spanish so hard, how did you started?
So, yeah, we started just by doing decks and hoodies after having made loads of videos of the local skate scene. We just thought we'd start branding it and printing it and getting it out there. It all started like that.
I'm assuming it means TR7 and not your actual skateboarding.
Yeah, or my life. I was born. I'm guessing it means that. But if not, if it was skateboarding, my mum got me into it at a young age.
That they follow it up with how many people work at TR7?
So it's always just been the three of us, my wife Martina, myself as directors, and then Harry Weil as the one and only star employee. We like to keep it small. We want people to know that any day that you come in, it's either going to be myself or Harry that are building your board or teaching your lesson. We don't want it to be crazy amounts of staff that maybe aren't as passionate as we are.
Definitely. And Harry has his own pro board now with you guys, right?
Yeah. So he's actually the only pro on the team. We surprised him with it a couple of years back now. He's got two pro boards with us now, and hopefully we'll bring up one at some point. But that was just a no-brainer. Like you say, like even going up to London, he holds the standard high, and he's an ATV, and he doesn't just do well in contests. He's got numerous video parts, and he's just constantly pushing himself. So it seems silly to not have a pro board for him.
His style as well. He makes everything look like he's just chilling.
He is. That's just it. Like you ask him how it's done, he's like, you just do it.
Also, same person, different question. Is the dog part of the team? With a laughy face emoji.
I'd say he's more of a mascot than a team rider. He's always at the shop, so he's kind of a local legend. I honestly feel like more people in town know him than us nowadays. And if you look at our reviews on Google, his name comes up a lot more often than any of ours do. And he is on one of our boards. Like, we printed a graphic that he's on, and hopefully he'll have his own pro board one day, just a big graphic with his face on it.
I love it.
He's part of the family, but he's not part of the team.
I love it. He's turning up in Google reviews.
Yeah, everyone loves it. It just makes the vibe of the whole shop just that much more fun when the kids come in and get to play with the dog. And he's so great at greeting everyone. He's very sociable.
Jonah Skaters's response. How long have you been skateboarding for? I don't think I asked this one. This is what I want to say.
I want to say just over 20 years. So I probably first picked up a board when I was around 4 or 5, kind of classic story. My older brother did it and I nicked his board. And I didn't really properly get into it until I moved to Mallorca. So about 8 or 9. So yeah, around 20 years obsessively, because I've never took a break from it. I've been nonstop apart from injuries since getting into it.
I think everyone doing my job for me is a good idea. I should just go through Instagram questions instead of actually having to think of
myself.
Good to
know that there's a good few questions.
This is Brett Dyes. Can Legend. You even tray flip?
Yeah, I might do that one a bit too often. I spent a lot of time practicing it when I was younger and it kind of became the only trick I did for a while. So I try not to do them too much nowadays just because I don't want to be that guy that does the same trick everywhere. Been trying to get my switch ones down so I can just be the switch tray guy instead. That sounds way cooler.
Super difficult.
For sure.
I mean, 360 Again, flips are difficult.
Yeah. Well, inverts are difficult, Rob.
I can't do inverts.
I've seen you do, I don't know what they're called. I've seen you do some stuff like that.
Miller flip.
Ah, there you go. See, I don't know the terminology.
It's so funny you're going to have our go-to tricks. Miller flip and nollie hard flip are my go-to tricks and people probably get fed up with them. Right, final question from Jeverett. What's it like running a skate shop board company and then with a skateboard and a little emoji?
I love it personally. I mean, it's kind of every skater's dream, isn't it? To have your own company, your own team that you get to manage. And obviously it comes with a lot of stress and a lot of hard work. It's not something that we do half-hearted, but I can't take the credit for it really, because my wife, Martina, is the brains behind it. I get all the credit all the time. People are like, you boys are killing it. I'm the face of it. My missus is the brains of it.
Shouts.
But we love it, like being able to bring out new graphics and work with different artists and support the skate scene. That's something I've always wanted to be able to do. So very grateful to have achieved it.
That's a nice final question. Thank you. And final shout outs, any final words you want to leave?
Shout outs to everyone that supported me since day one, all the homies back in Mallorca, my wife, my mum, my dad, my brother, my family, all the TR7 crew, the family, and Nuki, just the community here. Thank you for everything and making this dream possible. We wouldn't have been able to do it without your support.
Amazing. And I'm going to go back.
I was just going to say, keep an eye out for the crowdfunder. It's going to be going live soon and we're going to need all the help we can get to make this new, bigger skate park for Cornwall.
I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being able to shout about the designs because the designs look super fun.
You'll have to come down for opening day and do some Miller flips.
Yes. If I'm not back in Mexico, let's do this. And I have to apologise. I'm going to go. This is a rare event, but I'm going to go to just me. I like set up this whole scene behind me with like all my skateboards. I've got a bottle of like skate wine here to try and look, you know, semi-professional. And now I realise that when I go to you and me, all you can see is the microphone and my face. So the hour that I spent setting this little scene up, I should have set up this microphone. So I apologise for that, Jazz.
That's all right. I kind of did the same. I thought, this doesn't look like a skater's living room. I'm going to whack my cruiser in the background.
Well, Chaz, thank you ever so much for being on. Apologies for my amateurness since I've been back from Mexico. Apparently, I've forgotten a lot of things with OBS and setting up scenes and concentrating on important things like microphones. It's been an awesome discussion.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries. And I really look forward to, the crowdfunder first of all, and then hopefully skating the skate park.
Definitely.
The new skate park.
I can't wait, mate. It's been a crazy few months of working from home and I am not built for admin. I need to be back in the skate park world, teaching and talking about skateboarding and not talking about numbers.
Fully. It's grinding as well when you're talking about stuff that you don't want to talk about. It's like double the energy.
For sure. Especially when your business partner is your wife. We're just talking about work all day, every day.
Massive shout outs to the wife.
Shouts out to Martina. She's the best. None of that would be possible without her. So
amazing. Thank you ever so much, Chaz. Take it easy.
Thank you, Rob.
Speak to you soon. Cheers. Back in North Devon. First podcast from the UK. Few weeks out, so I'm a little bit rusty on the old interview questions, but I hope you enjoyed that. I really enjoyed it. It's really interesting to hear from Chaz down in TR7 UK. Shout outs to the boys down there. Thank you for all your questions. More guests coming up soon. I've been harassing people to get on the podcast, so keep an eye out on the socials. The wineclub.sbs. I've actually got a website which I should probably shout about more often. And stay tuned. Thanks for support. See you again next time. The Wine Club. The UK 2023. Chaz Murray, Merriweather, TR7. Brilliant times.
Who are you guys working for?
Who is this?
It's Skate Wine.
Oh, beautiful. Did you say Skate Wine?
Yes, sir.